Go back into South Bend's history. 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. And what do you see? You see groups of people working to bring change to this city. They had different ideas of what that change should be. They didn't always agree. And their problems sometimes looked different than ours. But in every era, there were groups of people for whom positive change was their life goal. This podcast, South Bend's Own Words, features the voices of people who helped make this city change. We'll play you selections from the Civil Rights Heritage Center's oral history collection with the goal of telling you a more complete history of the city. It's the story of many cultures, not just one. It's the story of South Bend. George McCulloch dedicated most of his professional life to educating thousands of South Bend schoolchildren. As a longtime school counselor and then principal, he made certain there was at least one positive person in every child's life. He grew up on South Bend's west side in an area sometimes called LaSalle Park, sometimes called Beck's Lake. In the first half of the 20th century, LaSalle Park was one of the few places African Americans were allowed to live. In spite of the people living there, or perhaps because of it, nearby factories like Bendix would dump waste there. Because much of that industrial waste was toxic, today the area is considered a Superfund site. That puts long-term care and cleanup under the direction of the Environmental Protection Agency. In 2003, Dr. Les Lehman from the Indiana University South Bend Civil Rights Heritage Center sat down with Mr. McCulloch. They talked about his life, his career, his experiences growing up through the South Bend school system, and his views on South Bend's strides towards equality.
I was born in South Bend, 1950, raised in an area that's called LaSalle Park, out at Beck's Lake. In the evening, in the wintertime, we would all sit around the stove, get warm, we'd run and get in the bed. And we'd wake up in the morning, it would be cold, and ice had formed around the baseboard of the room, because when the potbelly stove was on, the brick would sweat.
Oh, yeah.
And then at night, when the fire died down, the ice along the bottom of the floor that was concrete would freeze. You know, the rats were so bad we would go out and actually have a group of guys to go out and kill rats. And we would flush them out of the hole and we'd beat them with bats. And they were big as cats. The cats couldn't fool them.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
It was used as part of the city dump, actually. Yeah. Guys would come out and empty their trash trucks and nobody would say anything. And we would use it as a resource, actually, because when we ran out of coal to burn in our potbelly stoves, when we were in those block projects, we'd go out there and get some wood. And then we all knew that Bendix was dumping toxic waste on the other side of the park. And that place is still roped off. We know there's toxic waste over there from the old furniture that they dumped over in there, and we would put that in there and burn it. Salvage some of that wood.
Sure, that's right. Well, you came through the South Bend school system. Mm-hmm. You went to Harrison.
Harrison Elementary.
Okay.
Right? Junior High, K-8.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Harrison was a fairly integrated school?
At the time, yes.
Yeah.
Between the hours of 8 and 3.
What's that mean?
That means that back in the 50s and early 60s, when you lived in LaSalle Park, you were not allowed to cross Western Avenue in the evening hours unless you were going to the grocery store. People would, the whites would see you across Western after hours, after dark. They would throw rocks at you and bottles and curse. We lived on the north side of Western Avenue. Mm-hmm. And Harrison was located on the south side of Western Avenue. And that was a dividing line between the whites and the blacks in the LaSalle Park area. Even on our side of the street, on the north side of Western Avenue, there were two restaurants, and I don't remember the name of those restaurants, but when you went into order, you could not sit down. You had to stand and place your order. And if some whites came in after you, they would wait on the whites before they would wait on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
We had some riots out in that area in 67.
I was part of that.
Well, I'd like to hear you talk about that, or whatever. How would you describe that?
Well, I think what happened was there was a lot of frustration in the South Park area because we knew that we were being ignored totally as a neighborhood, as a race of people. We all attended Harrison School. We knew that we were getting handed down books from Pearlie. You would read the side of the book and it would say Pearlie. You open it up on the inside, and the book would be 10, 15, 20 years old, and we knew that Pearlie was getting new books because our teachers would tell us we're getting handed-down books.
Somebody at Pearlie told me they got hand-me-downs from Jefferson.
Oh, I don't know. I was.
So you might have been third school down the list
To get the books. Our streets were just terrible. We still had dirt streets back in the 60s. Huge potholes, no police protection at all. You could call a police officer, they might show up, or they might not.
Not even the black police officers came in the area?
No. We didn't see a police officer. They would not patrol the area at all. A lot of violence in this pool hall that was on the corner of, is at the end of Lake Street, sitting on Washington Street. It was a pool hall, liquor store combination, a lot of violence, shooting, stabbings, cutting, and stuff like that. And we just felt that something needed to be done in order to clean up the neighborhood. And so it got to the point where if you're not going to do anything, we'll have to take some action. We began burning homes, throwing rocks at cars.
In vacant houses you were burning?
In the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Throwing rocks at we'd go up to Western Avenue and actually throw rocks and stuff at white people as they drove down Western Avenue.
That's interesting because they've been throwing them at you for crossings for a while.
Yeah, so it was just an instinct, if you will,
yeah,
to return the favor. It got so bad at one time, we were burning homes, that we started throwing rocks at the firemen. They just took off, let the homes burn to the ground. But the riots, the disruption, I think all grew out of frustration and anger and the fact that that neighborhood that we lived in, LaSalle Park area, was not getting some of the services and recreational opportunities were not provided. It was just a terrible, terrible situation. Yeah.
So did you ever venture downtown?
Very seldom. We probably ventured down when we were probably 12, 13 years old. See, a lot of things we were not exposed to because our parents sort of sheltered us. Our grandparents and our mother and our aunts and uncles, they sort of kept us in the area where it was safe, in the LaSalle Park area. And it was kind of strange. Two things. One, when we got older, 12, 13 years old, when we wanted to go to the show, we had to walk, of course, downtown to the Granada State. I forgot some of the names of the others. And they made us sit in the balcony. Okay. So we were able to go, pay our quarter to get in, or whatever it cost, 35 cents, but we had to sit in the balcony. And a lot of us feel that still exists today. And I, when it comes to civil rights in the black community, I have seen South Bend regress, and it's so subtle, but at the same time, those of us who are aware, we can see it and feel it. The strides that we made in the late 60s, through the 70s,
yeah,
through the 70s, I see South Bend slipping back. When you are downtown in the middle of the day and there's a lunch break, you see very few black professionals in the banks, coming out of the courthouse as attorneys. You just don't see them. Business owners downtown, you don't see it. It's not there. The housing patterns, it's obvious where they're steering people. And then the people who are moving back in there are middle income, middle class people.
Yeah, we're the, yeah, I know, gentrifying it.
Yeah, so what we're doing is we moved all those people out, and then as the older people die off on the east side, and their homes are either being sold or rented out. If we're not careful, the same situation that we left in the 50s and 60s and 70s, we're going to recreate.
It'll be right back again.
It's going to be right back again. And then people and the people downtown, the ones with the authority to make a change or a difference, they're ignoring it. They're riding the high. Mm-hmm. I see it every day. I see the children, how they come to school. I see the parents. Let me give you a perfect example. When we were growing up, people would say, they would refer to us as being monkeys. We had tails and that kind of stuff. We hear those kind of comments in the store, laughter as we walked down the street or at the show downtown, we were in the balcony. And then in 2003, I see South Bend allowing these statues of monkeys to be placed throughout the community. And people, believe it or not, In the circles that I travel in, people are really frustrated with that. They sort of question, what in the world are we doing? Yeah. And I was in Jackson, Tennessee, They had dinosaurs.
They had cows in Chicago.
In Chicago. We come to South Bend.
Why did we choose monkeys?
See, they don't think about those kind of things.
Well, at any rate, late 60s, mm-hmm. there was an energy, something that caused young people, young African Americans, to be extremely energized, whether in their professional career or their sensitivity to issues and desire to make a difference or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But there was a pretty strong generation of people. Mm-hmm. How would you account, if you think that's true, how would you account for that?
I think what happened was that we saw what other people had, and we knew what it took in order to get what other people had. Let me go back to earlier when I said that we were sort of sheltered in LaSalle Park. Very seldom would we venture out. Mm-hmm. But once we were able to go out at age 12, 13, 14, and we saw what the world was like, we wanted a piece of that. What we saw that other people had, we wanted a piece of that. We wanted a part of that. And I can remember my wife and I, when we met up at Washington High School, we would always say that when we got out of school, these are the things that we were going to do. These are the things that we wanted. We wanted a nice house. Because we never knew they existed until we became teenagers. So all of that happened, I think, in the 60s. And then the things that Dr. Martin Luther King was doing in the South, I mean, we would like run home to turn on the TV. Just to watch the people protest against the injustices in the South. And then we're sitting there saying, my goodness, it's happening to us right here. The young people are the ones that were marching. Mm-hmm. The young people are the ones that filled the jams. Mm-hmm. Young people. And we're sitting there and we say, wait a minute. But the connection is, not only were they doing it in the South, but then once we found out how other people were living outside of our area, we wanted a piece of the pie. And then after Washington High School, being an athlete out there, I thought I was going to get a full scholarship to play basketball or football somewhere, and it never happened. So we ended up at IUSB, which has been a great experience for me. At IUSB, I majored in government, sociology, got a minor in U.S. history, went on to teach it at Riley High School and Washington High School, returned to IUSB, got a master's degree in counseling and guidance. After that, returned back to Washington as a guidance counselor. Also a head football coach and assistant boys basketball. Then after that, went on to Riley High School, became the assistant principal. I became principal at Riley and stayed there for 14 years as principal. We built a new $54 million high-tech building. The new superintendent gave me the opportunity to return home as the principal of Washington High School. And so I took advantage of that, and as the principal at Washington High School, I think a lot of us from LaSalle Park, because of the way we were living, because of the way we were treated, it sort of drove us, encouraged us, if you will, to do better and to make something of ourselves. And we would go to sleep at night. Well, I would go to sleep at night saying that I'm going to be successful one day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to buy a home. I'm going to get married. I'm going to stay with my family. And I would set those kind of goals for myself. And fortunately enough, I've been able to accomplish just about all of them. And now the reason that we stay in South Bend, my wife and I, is so that we can now reach back and encourage other students
to do
of all colors.
Got to, George.
Yeah, of all colors to do the same thing and encourage and push. That was one of the reasons I fought to get back to Washington. I don't have to be here. I was offered a job in Maryland. I was offered a job in Atlanta, Georgia. I was offered a job in Savannah, Georgia. I was offered a job in Las Vegas, believe it or not.
Is that right?
Las Vegas built 10 new high schools in 10 years. So I don't have to be here, but I'm here because I know what it's like. I know what has happened to the people here. I know what needs to happen. I know what people need to do in order to become successful. And so that's what we feed the children in the Washington District. That's what we fed the children in the Riley District. My counselor, and I'm not going to mention his name, I still remember his name, I can see his face. He told me that I was not college material. That's what he was telling me. And at the time he said, you know, you've been all working at Bendix, Rayco, Torrington. Those are all the factories that existed in the South Park area that most people worked at. And so when my counselor told me that, I just sat and looked at him. And when he finished talking, I just got up and walked out. I never went back to see him again for anything. And what's so ironic about it is that in 1982, I became a counselor in that same building. Not discouraging children, but helping all of the children. I tell my counselors today that your job is to service all of our children. I don't give a hoot who they are. And your job is to encourage. Your job is to assist the child to become whatever he or she wants to become.
South Bend's Own Words is made possible by executive producer Kevin Tidmarsh and me, George Garner. Want to see and hear more about South Bend's history? Our archival collection is online at Michiana Memory, a partnership with the St. Joseph County Public Library. Go to michianamemory.sjcpl.org. Special thanks to Civil Rights Heritage Center Director Daryl Heller for his guidance and support for this project. Learn more about the center and how it changed a formerly segregated South Bend swimming pool into an active learning center, dedicated to sharing the history and contemporary issues around civil rights and social justice. Visit us in person or online at crhc.iusb.edu.